C+34. Drive-in, Birchwood, Colorado. By the time Dan arrived at the drive-in and approached the familiar stairway to the makeshift stage beside the giant screen, the lot was as busy as he had ever seen it. He shouldn't have been too surprised by this. Word got out fast, as evidenced by the chime notification he heard from his trend ticker when Maria Janzik's social media post announcing his imminent public appearance spread like wildfire within seconds. Maria herself was there at the front of the densely packed crowd, alongside her ACN colleague, Kyle Young, and several other faces Dan knew but couldn't attach names to. Most of those reporters had been at the drive-in many times during the previous year's IDA fever, and many of them had witnessed in person the assassination attempt at Fiore Frontieri barely 24 hours earlier. Dan had to applaud their commitment to their jobs and was glad they were here to document what he hoped would be a truly game-changing happening. Trey had arrived in plenty of time and was waiting in his old spot to receive his own laptop along with the memory card, which contained Dan's slideshow presentations. "You only have to click two buttons," Dan said, laser-focused on the task at hand. "Press start when I give the signal to start the first slideshow, and then do the same again after it ends, but only if I give a second signal, okay? Only if I give the second signal."
"Got it," Trey said.
Dan pulled him in close to whisper.
"I need you to promise that if I tell you to start the second presentation, you will start it. And I need you to promise that if I tell you to start it, you won't stop it, no matter what."
"Why would I stop it?"
"Do you promise or not?" Dan pushed.
"Of course, I won't stop it, dude. Promise."
Dan thanked him and continued to the stairs. Clark stood guard at the bottom as he had on previous occasions when Dan addressed the world's media from this makeshift scaffold stage, the most recent of which had come on his way home from Lolo after meeting the messengers in the flesh. If this address ended with a similar scenario, the immense stress which was physically manifesting itself in the form of a heightened heart rate and unsteady feet would all be worth it. The greatest difference, of which Dan was acutely aware as he climbed the stairs, was that on this occasion, he stood alone before the media's cameras. Where Emma had once and always stood by his side, ready to step in and take his place if things ever went south, there was nothing but an empty space. There was no one beside Dan to squeeze his hand or whisper, "Game face," if he started to struggle, and there was no one else to deal with any unwelcome questions which might be thrown his way from the mob below. Dan McCarthy would have given anything to have Emma Ford by his side, but he knew that it was now time to stand on his own two feet. From the moment she first appeared at his door with a cheery smile and a business card, Emma had been making him a better version of himself. She had gotten him this far, and only he could take things forward from here. It was time to sink or swim, and Dan knew fine well that what he was about to do was tantamount to throwing himself into the deepest of deep ends, with nothing and no one to grab hold of, should the water get rough. Wearing the same now t-shirt he had sported during happier moments on the same stage, Dan looked out at the crowd and beyond it, to the news vans and satellite trucks parked at the edge of the lot. Further away still, a large group of regular citizens had gathered on Hawker's Hill for a view of the big screen. Nostalgia wasn't quite the word, but Dan was momentarily soothed by memories of better times, both those he'd spent with Clark on that very hill and those he'd spent with Emma on this very stage. Back then, the truth had been a simple thing, and all Dan had ever wanted to do was show it and tell it to whoever would look and listen. He now understood only too well what Emma had told him from the very beginning, that the truth was a complicated thing, and reflecting on this made it impossible for him not to miss those simpler times. He raised a hand to silence the crowd, surprised and more than a little empowered by how effective this gesture proved. He then tapped the microphone on his collar to check it was working and stepped forward.
"You have to listen carefully to everything I say," he said, "because parts of it might not make sense until the end."
Countless red lights were now staring back at Dan, signaling that he was going out live to untold millions of scared and desperate viewers around the world. He, in turn, gave Trey the signal to hit play, which immediately caused a 15-second countdown to appear on the giant screen.
You might not like some of what I have to say, but you have to hear it, and there's no one else left to say it.
This is not a confession, Dan said, pausing to take several deep breaths.
And this is not an apology.
After someone in the crowd yelled out, "So what the hell is it?" and Clark firmly told them to shut up and stop calling out, Dan glanced down at his older brother and got one final no-going-back nod of approval. Dan McCarthy then looked back out at the sea of cameras and answered the heckle.
This is full disclosure.